Welcome to True Story, the Public Relations Podcast, a space where we get a peek behind the scenes of brands and businesses that have a real story to tell. Because in today's world, we are done with perfect and fake. We want to support brands that aren't afraid to show their true colors. I'm your host, Whitney Lee, the founder of True Story PR, an agency focused on helping businesses show up authentically through their social media, PR, and more. We pride ourselves on always keeping it real. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey everyone, welcome back. We have another awesome interview for you today. We're sticking with our theme of hearing about incredible brands and businesses that have pretty interesting stories to tell. And I knew when we started this series, I had to reach out to this guy that you're going to meet today because he's got a pretty wild story about his watch company. So I want to welcome to the show RT Custer. He is the CEO of Vortic Watch Company and also just a massive serial entrepreneur, maybe I'll say that. So RT, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, Whitney. It's a pleasure to be here and I'm excited to tell my story.
Absolutely. Okay, so first of all, give us a quick overview of who you are. I know you've got a lot of entrepreneurial endeavors. And then tell us a little bit about Vortic specifically.
Yeah, so I started Vortic Watch Company back in 2014 with my business partner, Tyler. Long story short, we take antique American pocket watches and turn them into one of a kind wristwatches. We make one of the only truly American made watches. And we're positioned to grow right now. We're in Fort Collins, Colorado, is where our manufacturing facility is and where I'm sitting today. And, you know, it's been almost a decade of running that company. I love making watches. I love manufacturing. I love storytelling. Each watch is one of a kind, so they all have their own story. And, you know, when we take old pocket watches and make them wristwatches, it has a great story of American history too. So I love all that stuff. And what got me into that was marketing, actually. Both my parents were basically like Mad Men, a little bit after the Mad Men era, but in the 1970s, they worked for Leo Burnett in Chicago. And they were on the, you know, the Pepsi account and the McDonald's account. So I grew up around advertising. We used to watch the Super Bowl just for the ads in my house when I grew up. And so during the pandemic, I started a marketing agency because through running Vortic Watch Company, I couldn't find a good one or I thought I couldn't. And so I did the stupid thing that serial entrepreneurs like me do. And I just started my own, you know. Realized I didn't want to run a marketing agency and I didn't want to run two huge companies at the same time. That was a little too stressful for me in 2020 and 2021. So I partnered with my friend Jim and our agency is now called Carter and Custer. We still do all kinds of content-based marketing. We're using AI to write words and more words than people can do by themselves. Our thing is just pumping out content for either SEO or video. And it's really cool. And he runs the company and I get to just talk about it at this point, which is really, really awesome. And my main role for that company is the mastermind that we own. We actually purchased Fast Foundations Mastermind about a year ago from all of our mentor, Chris Harder. And that's really my give back and my passion project is Fast Foundations Mastermind. We basically teach entry-level entrepreneurs how to grow from five or six to over seven figures a year. So those are my things. I mean, other things, I like investing. I have a couple pieces of real estate. I messed around with crypto probably a little too late, but it'll come back, right? So I really like investing. I like talking about money. I like talking about entrepreneurship. And I like growing businesses. So here I am.
I love it.
You know, I always skip the family part. I'm all business all the time. I have two boys, a beautiful partner, Lindsay, and two little boys. So family life is also fun and definitely keeps me fully rounded in the busy sector.
That's awesome. They're adorable. I watch them on your Instagram all the time. So for anybody listening, so I'll give you a little backstory. RT and I met because we were a part of the Elite Entrepreneur Mastermind through a guy named Chris Harder. Who is also an entrepreneur. So we met through that, became fast friends. I guess that was 2 years ago. That was 2021. Yeah.
Time is kind of just a blur, you know, kind of right after the pandemic there. But yeah, it was about 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah. So RT and I start talking and he starts telling me about this watch company. I'm like, oh my God. And there was a lot happening at the time. And it actually ended up coming to fruition, and which I'm not going to give away the whole story, but that's when I was like, man, just hearing his story, I was like, you guys need to hear about this. So RT, I guess my first question is, why watches? Are you like a watch junkie?
Yeah. You know, I'm not actually that into watches. Half the time I find myself not even wearing a watch, even though I own a watch company and have access to some of the coolest ones on the earth. I love watches because of manufacturing and marketing. So first of all, running a watch company is basically like running a marketing company for most people. Most watch companies are part of huge conglomerates like LVMH. So it's like Louis Vuitton owns Tiffany and like Tag Heuer and big companies like that, like other watch companies. And then, you know, for instance, Omega is part of the Swatch group. And then a fun fact a lot of people don't know is Rolex is actually a nonprofit. And so Rolex takes all the profit that it makes from selling some of the most valuable watches in the world and making billions of dollars or billions of Swiss francs a year and passes it through a nonprofit entity and then reinvests it in real estate. And Rolex or its foundation owns more real estate in Switzerland than almost any other company. And so for me, I look at watches as like this really cool storytelling outlet. And my business partner and I had this idea that blended old and new. You know, we take old pocket watches and turn them into wrist watches. We like to say we preserve American history one watch at a time. And so that just hit like all the things that I like. I love American history. I love military history. The watch I'm wearing is a military pocket watch that was turned into a wristwatch. I love marketing and storytelling. And then I love manufacturing. I'm an engineer. I studied industrial engineering at Penn State. And so I just love learning how things work, how things are made. And I get all of that in one building here now because I run the marketing and finance for our company. But my team, you know, right through this wall is making watches by hand. And then about 100 yards that way is 2,500 square feet of machines that take a hunk of metal and turn them into all of our parts to make the watches. So I don't know. I get to nerd out about all my fun, all my favorite things all the time.
That's so cool. And I know that, like, you know, everybody has their thing. Like women, you know, maybe it's shoes or purses or whatever, but like, watch people are watch people and they go nuts over watches. So like, what a cool industry to work in. So I remember you telling me there's only a certain number, right? So how do you guys go around and source these? And don't you do, you know, it's been a little while since we talked about this, but like you only drop a certain amount, right?
Yeah. So we can only make about 300 watches a year right now. And it's just because with these old pocket watches, like you mentioned, they're hard to find, the good ones. We focus on the American pocket watches. What a lot of people don't know was that there was 10 great American watch companies from Boston to Chicago. They were all across the Northeast and Midwest. And those 10 companies from the mid-1800s to the mid-1900s made millions of pocket watches in America. Most people don't know that even happened. And so when you see a pocket watch today, to most people, it doesn't have a whole lot of value. A lot of people perceive some value from its rarity, but most of the value is in the gold or silver of the case of that pocket watch. And so we're buying them from, I call it the scrap yards. It's pawn shops that are scrapping the gold and silver of the case. And we're upcycling the inside, the guts of those old pocket watches. All the gears and springs that make it tell time, we call it the movement. We take that, we restore them, and then we manufacture the outside to turn it into a wristwatch. And so they're fairly rare, or at least the really nice ones are. it's very hard to do what we do. Watchmakers that actually restore the movements are a dime a dozen. I mean, there's literally dozens of them in America. So it's just hard to find the labor to do this. And then, you know, it's a difficult thing to make a lot of them. So we decided we were just going to make basically one watch a day. And that's what we do. We call it the watch of the day, Monday through Friday at 12 noon Mountain Time. We release one new one of a kind watch. And when it sells, it's gone.
That's so freaking cool. Okay. So here's where it gets interesting. I know at some point along the way, I don't know when, but y'all had a very interesting twist with some conflict, I'll say. So can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, when did this happen? Give me the scoop.
Yeah. So we launched our company on Kickstarter in 2014. It was actually November 17 is when we launched our company on Kickstarter. We used crowdfunding. We were kids, you know, we had no idea how to start a company. We had no money. And so we put this idea of an old pocket watch turned into a wristwatch on the internet and said, okay, if people like it, they'll buy it, they'll pre-order it, and then we'll figure it out. It took off right away. People loved the idea. Our Kickstarter was successful. We raised, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in 30 days. You know, it was pretty good. We took that to some investors, got some capital, and said, okay, we're going to start a watch company. We call it Vortic. And we're making this product that we call the American Artisan Series, antique American pocket watch turned into wristwatches. It took us about a year to actually ship the first watch, like from trying to figure out how to make them and create sustainable systems and talking to the customers. And in that time, we started doing some marketing. We put an ad in a big watch newspaper or a big watch magazine, I'm sorry, and basically launched the company and said, here's who we are. Here's what we do. We take old pocket watches, turn to wristwatches. And about 4 months before we shipped our first watch, we got our first cease and desist from the world's largest watch company, the Swatch Group. The Swatch Group owns Omega and 26 other brands, multi-billion dollar company in Switzerland. They own the trademark on the word and the brand called Hamilton. Hamilton Watch Company was one of what I call the great American watch companies back in the 1800s and early 1900s. Went out of business, but the Swatch Group purchased that brand and now makes watches under that brand. And they saw us taking old Hamilton pocket watches and turning them into wristwatches. It still says Hamilton on the face of the watch, because that's, we're not changing it. We're just upcycling it, right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't like that. They thought we were using Hamilton's brand to make money, which in our mind, we're just making art. They called it trademark infringement. Long story short, that was May of 2015 when we got sued. We fought that lawsuit for the majority of our company's life. And we found out we officially won. And they decided not to take it to the Supreme Court. So everything was totally done in September of 2021. So it was basically a 6-year legal battle that almost put us under, I mean, dozens of times. I'm surprised I have this much hair still.
It looks great.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a journey. And so we're actually documenting that journey in a book that's hopefully going to come out around Independence Day this year. Starting to write it right now and just kind of put it all on paper, mostly so that people don't make the same mistakes we did and can learn from all the ups and downs of our entrepreneurial journey. But we call it upcycling the American dream. And because it's my David and Goliath story. We defeated the world's largest watch company in federal court because what we do is not illegal. It was never wrong. We got bullied and they tried to make us go away, and we're still here. We're still kicking. We're still fighting.
So what was your argument back whenever they say you're copyright infringement or trademark infringement? What was your argument back that it was considered art?
Yeah. So one, the biggest legal argument there was, one of the bigger ones was art, is that every single one is one of a kind. But what we actually ended up defending was the process of upcycling. And that's why we came up with that book title. So upcycling is taking something that has almost no value and recycling it and turning it into something different that has much greater value. And you could think of it, there's a lot of other legal cases that are fairly similar, but in different industries. So one of the biggest ones was Lexmark v. Impressions. Lexmark printer company sued this small company that was taking Lexmark ink cartridges and refilling and refurbishing them and selling them as authentic Lexmark cartridges that had just been refurbished and refilled with ink, saving the consumer a lot of money because it's a refurbished product, but it was originally manufactured by Lexmark. That one went all the way to the Supreme Court in like the 90s. Mm-hmm. And the small company won because the small company is doing something good for the planet. And the Supreme Court said, as long as you're telling the consumer exactly what you're doing, the final product, even though it's refurbished, can still have the original big company's brand on it, as long as the consumer isn't confused. That's what trademark infringement is all about, is they call it consumer confusion. Mm-hmm. And so from the beginning of Vortec Watch Company, we, not on purpose, just we told people what we did start to finish. It's like, we're taking an old pocket watch, we're turning a wristwatch. That's the point of the company. And so like we had to describe that in our marketing. And so inadvertently and accidentally, we were properly describing and not confusing anyone the whole time. And that's what the judge in our case found, was that there was no consumer confusion. We did everything correctly to educate our customers. Our customers are already highly educated and sophisticated. Like you said, watch people. They like love this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then yes, it also was and is considered art, what we do. And so we came at it from a few different, they call it defensible angles or perspectives. But unfortunately it was a 6-year battle, a 6-year difficult conversation, because none of that stuff happens quickly. And we had to take it all the way to trial to properly defend ourselves.
So for those 6 years, did you have to like stop producing anything?
We stopped producing what we call the Lancaster, which was Hamilton pocket watches made into wristwatches. We stopped producing those for a couple of, I would say 3 years during the middle of the lawsuit, just out of precaution. Like we didn't want to make it worse and kind of salt in the wound, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then there was a certain inflection point where I couldn't afford to pay our attorneys anymore. And I had to switch attorneys. And the new attorney I brought in that we ended up going to trial with, he told me, like, you know, you don't need to stop. You've never done anything wrong. So, you know, there's no reason you can't keep making these. And so we started again. But you know, it was only probably 15% of our business or something like that. Mm-hmm. The point was, if taking a Hamilton pocket watch and turning it into a wristwatch was wrong, then that would inherently mean that taking any pocket watch with any other brand on it, like a Rolex pocket watch, for instance, and turning into a wristwatch, that would also be wrong. And so by proving that taking a Hamilton pocket watch, turning into a wristwatch was okay, and the lawsuit's called Hamilton v. Vortec. Mm-hmm. And so by winning that lawsuit, we proved that upcycling a pocket watch into a wristwatch, no matter what brand is on it, as long as you are
honest,
like, yeah, telling the consumer exactly what they're getting, is okay. And so today, I mean, I could take a Rolex pocket watch, turn it into a wristwatch, and that would be okay, as long as it's all original inside and I'm telling the consumer exactly what they get. Rolex could sue me, but it would be thrown out almost immediately because there's legal precedent now.
Interesting. So please tell me that they had to pay for all of your attorney fees. Cause for a small business, like my God, that probably alone was just a stressor.
It was hundreds of thousands and they didn't pay for a dime. We, even though we won, it's kind of one of the things that I want to talk about in the book and talk about just in general is, technically you're innocent until proven guilty, but it costs a lot of money to continuously prove that you're innocent. And unless the lawsuit was completely heinous, like there was no grounds for it at all. In those cases, if somebody's just falsely suing someone for no reason, it's clearly BS.
Yeah.
Then you can countersue and try to get your funds back, you know, for defending yourself, which also, I mean, it takes years to do that. And a lot more money up front. For us, the judges called this and the court system called this an interesting case, which means that there had been similar cases, but like I said, they were in like printer ink and golf balls and like other products. There hasn't been a luxury product issue mm-hmm. like this. And there wasn't much in watches or jewelry. And so unfortunately, it cost us a lot of money to go set this precedent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So I love asking every entrepreneur this. Was there ever a moment, and I'm sure there was, but was there a moment whenever you were just like, oh my God, screw it. We should just give up. Like, I'm so freaking done with this. Like, I just want to throw in the towel.
Yeah. So I call that, I just started writing that chapter of the book. And I think I'm going to call the chapter Colorado's Best or the Best Colorado Bankruptcy Attorney. And that's, it was sometime in 2019, I think maybe 18. I think it was 19. I sat in the parking lot of our office. I had just gotten off a plane and drove back to, from Denver to Fort Collins, Colorado here, making calls to different attorneys the whole time, just getting advice, trying to change attorneys. Cause I knew we were going to have to go to trial and I knew trial was going to cost a lot of money and I wasn't sure if we could do it anymore. And I gave up, basically, and I Googled best Colorado bankruptcy attorney. And I thought I'd just like, see, okay, what if we file bankruptcy? Do I have to file personal bankruptcy? I had never used or typed that word before. I had no idea what it meant. And I called the first one that came up. His assistant said, this never happens. He's super busy because we get calls like this all the time, but he's got like 10 minutes before his next thing. And I told him what you wanted to talk about and he wants to talk to you. Do you want to talk to him right now? And he canceled his meeting. We chatted for like 2 hours. I met him in person the next day. Basically what he said, his name's Rob Lance and he saved our lives. He saved the company. He saved everything. And he basically said, hey, I have good news and bad news. The bad news is I'm not the type of bankruptcy attorney that you're looking for. I actually go and when some big company falsely files bankruptcy, I go and attack them and try to save the small company that they're impacting. But he said, I have good news. And the good news is my business partner and my legal partner is an expert in trademark law. I love David and Goliath stories like this and I can help you. And yeah, it gives me chills to think about it. And I just had him here in the studio. We filmed 6 like chapters of this book and documentary about how he worked for free for months and he saved us. And you know, he said I sounded suicidal on the call. I don't remember any of it. But he said he was just like, I knew I could help you and I knew I could make a difference. And he did. We won. And now there are literal law textbooks written about this case because of him. So, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. And I think some of those big boys go after small people because they feel like if they tie you up in court long enough, you'll just run out of money and give up. And that's almost what happened.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we literally did. And thankfully, he was willing to either work on free or credit or something like that and figure it out because we did run out of money and we did give up. But he and our friends and our family and our investors and our customers, they never gave up on us and our dream. And that's why we call it upcycling the American dream, because I mean, I haven't made it. I don't feel successful, but I think when you look at what, you know, I own the building and the land I have the building on and we're making watches in America. They didn't take us down. So that's about it.
I love it. Okay. So just to wrap up, if people want to find you, cause I know they're going to want to read this book. They want to find you and connect with you and also Vortic, tell them where to find you so they can connect. And, you said the book's coming out around 4th of July.
Yeah, ideally. That's when we're going to try to launch it sometime this summer. It's vorticwatches.com, V as in Victor, ORTIC watches.com. And I'm just RT, like Robert Thomas, RT Custer, C-U-S-T-E-R on Instagram, LinkedIn, et cetera. Happy to chat on those platforms. Or obviously welcome anyone to the club. If you want to buy a Vortic watch, it's vorticwatches.com.
Love it. Very cool. David and Goliath story. I get chills. Like it's, that's so awesome that you stuck it out. So congrats to you and what a freaking cool brand with a cool story. Like exactly what I love featuring on the podcast.
Thanks, Whitney. Happy to be here.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you loved what you heard, please take a moment to screenshot this episode and share it to social media using hashtag TrueStoryPR, or better yet, write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in. See you next time for another True Story.